You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation, I want you to buckle up. We have an interesting podcast today with Dr. Peter Martone. He's a chiropractor, exercise physiologist, and has some interesting perceptions on sleep, and more importantly, how to fix a messed up neck, which unfortunately I've dealt with for a number of years, whether it be from sleeping angles or, you know, playing football or impacts or whatever it is. We end up losing that curve in the neck and the curve in the back, and a lot of the dysfunction that we're seeing is coming from the neck. So finding a better sleeping position and, more importantly, maximizing sleep and fixing some of these issues has become his life goal. So we got an interesting podcast. We get into it. And more importantly, like how sleep is affecting your entire body and the mechanics, and hopefully answer some questions and give you an idea on how you can maximize your performance through sleep, finding better structure and put it together. So prepare yourself, buckle up, Dr. Peter Martone. So man, what's the, like, give me the gist, dude. Like, give me the play. I mean, I know you do, I was going through your website, you know, chiropractor, neck nest, educator, speaker, like give me the 10,000 foot view.
Dude, I'm a holy mackerel. I'm like, I zigzagged kind of where I am today. So I guess always been a, a really athletic individual, right? So skydiving, hang gliding, rock climbing, traveled the world, lived in Australia out of a backpack, you know, so lived kind of that type of adrenaline seeking, dive into everything type of life, not realizing that I had severe ADD. when you're that young, you kind of, you know, you run away from everything, not knowing what the heck you're running away from. So then when I got into chiropractic, I was helping people with all of these health dysfunctional issues, not realizing the main issue is a suppression of the vagus nerve and causing people not to be able to repair. So regardless on what they have, I was trying to adjust, align the atlas, but I had back pain my entire life. And I just attributed it to everything that I did, you know, with all the athletics until I herniated my own disc and herniated, my entire leg was numb. And I'm like, holy shit. So that's kind of what brought me into the sleep industry, because I found out I could fix it at night while I was sleeping. And then when I was sleeping and fixing the way I slept, I started balancing out my vagus nerve, and then all of my function came back in my GI tract. So that's kind of long story. I guess doctor fix thyself. And then once you see the pattern, now I can't unsee it. Now I travel the world teaching people how to heal themselves while they sleep.
So how did you come across this? Was it just, like a small kind of little tweaks in this, I'm gonna try this and this, or did you know that you had this sleep dysfunction?
No. So, I got my ass handed to me really young in my career. So I've been a chiropractor now for 24 years and an exercise physiologist. I was a professional trainer before that. So, you know, you sit there and you're like, oh man, I got my shit down. So I have my briefcase, right? And I was the first chiropractor to be invited to speak for continuing education credits for Harvard medical students. So I was over there, they're giving continuing education credits. So I'm in Mass General and I have this whole room of all of these MDs, and I'm, you know, doing my whole chiropractic thing, showing my spine and, you know, had all my x-rays up and crushed it, right? Until they started asking questions. So then once they started asking questions, I started stepping outside of what I knew. And because, you think you have your diagnosis down until you work with people that own diagnosis, sure, right? You think you have this down until you're in a world that they own that. So I got my ass handed to me. And I said, once I left, I said, that will never happen to me again. So I need to own something. So what I ended up doing is I started basing principles off of law. So law is like gravity. If you drop something, it falls, you can't argue it. The writing reflex states that body posture adjusts to head position. Davis's law, tissue will remold based on the stresses applied. Wolf's law, bone will remold based on the stresses applied. So once I started looking at law, I started seeing consistency in patterns. And once I was able to read patterns, now I can look at somebody and tell them what's wrong with them just by reading the neurology, because the neurology affects function. So with the ADD brain, once it sees patterns, then you're going to be able to come up with things that don't exist because people have never put those patterns together before. So when I herniated my disc, I realized that there was an adaptation to loss of cervical curve picked up with the psoas major muscle spasm, which takes pressure off of the spine and curves the hips. Well, the psoas is the only muscle in the human body that attaches directly to a disc. So I'm like, holy shit. If I fix my neck, I'm going to get rid of the psoas problem. So I didn't have a back problem all these years. I had forward neck posture with an adaptation to a hip shift that I was getting adjusted till I was blue in the face, but it never held. So that's kind of how I backed into all of the principles that now I teach today.
What was the back injury?
It was a herniated disc. So
I know, but
I always had back pain.
Where, like L4, L5?
Oh, it was L5, S1.
Oh, L5.
And then, and then I was on my mountain bike and I did a big log roller that was about 7 feet off of the ground. And I had back pain, so I twisted. And when you twist, your tire turns. I mean, the log was only this big. Mm-hmm. So we were going on it. And then my tire turned and I had to jump off and I landed on a rock. Mm.
We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Power Athlete delivers battle-tested performance programming for every kind of athlete. So do you want to go from average Joe to MVP? Then dominate with Field Strong. Get stacked and jacked with Jack Street. Hustle in life and still build muscle with Grindstone. Fear no opponent with Dragon Slayer. Be harder than coffin nails with Hammer. Max out minimal equipment with Lean Enable. Or unlock those newbie gains with Bedrock. Get over to powerathletehq.com/training and choose your 7-day free trial right here, right now. Get lifting, get training, get in shape, all while listening to the rest of this show. So there you were. And then once you, so you go down this road to figure out like, hey, I got to fix this because, I mean, obviously the people you were working with weren't helping you with your dysfunction. I mean, that's the thing we run into all the time. I mean, people are just in constant pain. And yet they go to a provider that adjusts them. They're fine for a few days and then they get right back into the pattern or they get into their shitty mechanics and it comes right back.
The pattern. Pattern is everything, right? And patterns are, so your number one defining characteristic of your health and well-being is your daily rituals.
Sure.
And your daily rituals are driven by your beliefs. So what you believe drives your actions, which basically gives you your reality. And so that's why when you can look at someone, you can tell them what their beliefs are based on how, because you, if you can read the neurology like a blueprint, you then know what's going on with somebody before they can even tell you. And those patterns are so consistent, especially when things are backed in based on law. And that's the same thing that I applied to the sleep industry, how people sleep is people think about sleep but so backwards because they're all listening to, oh, when you sleep, that's when your body repairs. That's when you get more energy and in lymphatic drainage and you want to sleep on your side. So things drain better. This is all good, but it's bullshit really. When you look at truly what the reason is that somebody doesn't sleep well. And then all this other garbage that you see out there in the industry, like best sleeping positions, you break down those studies, they're done on rats, and it doesn't correlate to the human spine. So I'm so excited when I get on and we can, especially with like performance, people that are looking for more performance out of their bodies, it starts at night when you sleep.
So why do people sleep like shit?
Well, it's because most people, the average person, will toss and turn 20 to 40 times a night. That's the average person. How is that sustainable to a good night's sleep? What do you think the number one cause is that a person will toss and turn? Number one cause.
Usually they're looking for a colder part of the bed. I think the room temperature and a warm bed is why people toss and turn, constantly looking for a cool part of the bed.
So there's the three reasons that I identify why people toss and turn. Number one is not, well, number one, then number two is safety. Number three is temperature. And the number one is because the body's in pain. So the body is in an uncomfortable position. And then it's going to move out of that position to prevent injury to the tissue. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so you toss and turn and then airway management. But you toss and turn really for three reasons. You're right. Pain, safety, and temperature.
Sure.
So if we back in, so I call it the sleep triune. There's the body is trying to, you know, so good sleep starts with the triune. First thing is conscious brain, subconscious brain, and the body. The conscious brain, it wants to fall asleep. It wants a great night's sleep. It needs to stop thinking is what the conscious brain needs to do. And when it puts itself to sleep, it thinks it's comfortable. Well, when reality is the subconscious brain wants to feel safe. So the subconscious brain, so basically the conscious brain is putting the subconscious brain into a safe position. And then the body wants alignment. But what happens is you're putting yourself into a position that is not sustainable. And you're putting yourself into a position where, especially if it's on your side, you're going to cause pain within 20 to 30 minutes. And that's why people will toss and turn. And if you want to challenge that, all you have to do is try to fall asleep try to watch a 2-hour movie in the position that you fall asleep in and see if you move out of that position. And then the answer to that question will be yes. So we want to back in the triune. You start with alignment, which the position I tell you to start with is going to be unsafe for the subconscious brain. And then the conscious brain is going to put so many obstacles saying that it can't do it because it's not conducive to comfort and safety as far as what the brain feels like. Because if you can start with alignment and then teach the subconscious to be safe and then the conscious brain how to fall asleep in that position, you could put a glass of water in my chest. I don't toss and turn at all at night. And then the amount of time over 8 hours of improvement you can get to structural realignment of the spine doing it that way, it's a game changer for anybody with pain or anybody that doesn't sleep well.
So when you are talking about safety, are you talking about like the body's desire to not injure itself while it sleeps? Or are you talking about some evolutionary model where as I'm sleeping, I'm worried that a bear is going to come eat me?
That's exactly what it is. Okay. It's the evolutionary model of the bear, you're running from a bear or you are. So
if you use an evolutionary model, sleep is really almost very confusing because you think about everything that's bigger and stronger and more dangerous than us lives at night. And yet here's this deal where we go into this, you know, semi-unconscious comatose state where we're completely indefensible and we're stuck like this, ideally, for, you know, a third to half of our lives, let's say. And, it must have extreme importance, because if you look at a lot of the different animals in Africa on the Serengeti, like I think a giraffe sleeps 2 minutes a day. Because if it sleeps longer, it's going to get eaten by something. But yet we sleep as much as we do. So it must have a massive impact, not only on the body and the brain and all these other key characteristics. And mind you, I thought sleep was bullshit when I was growing up. I had the idea that I'll sleep when I'm dead and that I can just out-train sleep. And like, if I go 100 miles an hour, the more muscle, the stronger, the better I eat. Sleep was just something I had to do when I was real tired. So now as being in my 40s, now I realize the value of sleep and I wish I could go back in a time machine and shake that kid a little bit.
Yeah, and I work with high-level athletes. And when you want that performance, you got to recharge and repair at night. Has to happen. And the better quality sleep that you get, the less quantity you need.
Sure.
Right. And most of that repair, you're right. Temperature's big. You need to drop 2 degrees in order to get into a good, nice, deep sleep. But really, when it comes down to it, Sleep is a battle between two systems, the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic nervous system is stimulated with safety, relaxation, calmness. Sympathetics are keeping you alive. And if you have a physiology, whether it's physical, whether it's emotional, or whether it's biochemical, that keeps you sympathetic dominant, you're always going to trash your sleep. And then over a period of time, you will internalize that with disease.
So let's say I come to you and I'm a shitty sleeper, right? Where does it start? Like, how do you, you know, like for me, I'll tell you just personally, I've slept with some form of device on the bed to cool the mattress. Like, I'm just a hot sleeper. We originally started with the chili pad and then we went to the Sleep Aid. And I wish that there was some government funded project to give everybody in America one of those. I mean, it's cold. If I move too much, it kind of has this AI that adjusts. I mean, it was a game changer for me just because whenever I felt like I was moving, I was constantly searching for a cool part of the bed. You know, I got the room at like 67 degrees and I'm still hot. I mean, so having a cold mattress, I don't know why it took us so long to get to it, but man, it's been an absolute game changer for me.
I'm going to unpack that a little bit for you.
Okay.
Now, you're looking at me in a lens, okay? Just do me a favor. Make a circle and look at me through that lens.
Okay.
Yeah, and then bring that back to your eye. All the way back to you. Sorry. Yeah. Okay, good. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
I write right, but I'm actually lefty, more left-dominant. Right?
You do things left. Okay, yeah. So you're cross-dominant. That's a big issue. Well, that's a big thing for sleep. So when you're cross-dominant, more than likely you've sprained your right ankle, which it looks like because of your head translation. And then if you turn your head, you won't turn to it as far to the left side as you do the right side.
No, that's actually good. I can see out of the left side of my body dramatically better than my right.
So you can see, say that again?
I can see I can see everything on the left side of my body. Mm-hmm. Not as well. I don't see nearly as far on the right.
Turn your head to the left side. And now turn your head to the right side. Okay, so you turn more to the right side than you do the left side.
Probably. Okay. Yeah, so, that's probably pretty true. I played left guard when I was in the NFL, and I played right tackle and right guard as well. I was dramatically could see more of the field off of the left side periphery than I could off the right.
So that's based on the optics of your eyes, but not the cervical range of motion. So your neurology is telling me something totally different. Your head goes this way and your hip goes this way. And usually that translates up from a right sprained ankle. So now, knowing that.
I injured my left knee, or sorry, my right knee is injured. It's actually all my right side of the body, my right shoulder and my right knee tend to have injury. So I think that kind of positions me a little funky.
It's all through the writing reflex. The law is based on how you're holding your head. And it's due to that loss of range of motion within that atlas. So that's going to suppress three systems, vagus nerve. So immune system, digestive system, and reproductive system are all suppressed. Not you specifically, but yes, low testosterone typically is an issue with guys, digestion issues, and immune system imbalances. So that is based on somebody's physiology reading them, like looking at them. So now if we back that in with a cross dominance, your brain requires a lot of spin. If you don't get that spin, you're going to be in a depressed state. So you're going to have high internalized anxiety. You compare yourself to other people, not you specifically, but this is just the avatar.
Yeah.
And then, so usually there's like this whole thing that comes around with cross dominance. So then you look at that cross dominance. That cross dominance is also going to internalize toxins. So right around 1, 2, or 3 o'clock is a liver dump. Usually a cross dominant individual will detoxify around that time, elevating your core temperature. That's typically why cross dominance usually, I just did a video on this yesterday, where if you're running hot at a specific period of time, it's either your metabolism running too high because you exercise too late, or there's usually a liver dump and your body's detoxifying around that time.
Or I just have a Tempur-Pedic bed that I think is too warm.
So your body should, if you're not using your covers correctly, your body should be able to temperature regulate at a 68 degree temperature. You're correct. That is a hot bed, which is not my favorite, but I like what you're using now because it's going to adjust temperature while you sleep.
Yeah, no, I always felt it was the bed. Like just laying on that Tempur-Pedic. I do like the Tempur-Pedic because I'm a big dude. It's always been a good bed for me. Yeah, no, I don't really have much anxiety. Don't have low testosterone, so
That's good.
maybe I'm a little bit of an outlier, but no, and I don't really, I mean, it's so, you know, obviously playing 10 years in the NFL, one of the issues I have too is the, actually, I could show you a picture here. I'll show you a picture because I go see a chiro that just did a scan of my neck and he actually sent me the picture. But yeah, so you can kind of see that. This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show. Where we cut off, I was showing you a picture of my neck. I herniated a disc. Actually, a facet joint got jammed in my neck against.
C5, C6.
Yeah, it was what were we playing? It was playing against the Rams, and it got stuck pretty bad, and I had like no neck mobility. And we had this old time osteopath that used to work on horses that like wrapped a strap around my neck and pretty much kicked me in the back of the head, and it popped back in. And I've never really, you know, periodically I would get some issues where like my neck would feel a little strange. I'd go see my chiropractor, and he'd kind of adjust it. And but then when I started rolling and doing jujitsu a couple of days a week, all of a sudden my neck was killing me. And so I went to this guy to get an X-ray, and he's like, "Well, the reason you're having problems is that your curve is reversed." But you know, the good thing is I don't have any disc herniations, and there's no you know, osteophytes or any damage. We just got to reverse the curve. So, and then he's like, "You know, it's probably only been like this for a couple of weeks. How long do you think it's been like this?" I'm like, "20 years." So
Did you do you have an A to P lumbar film looking at you this way?
Yeah, we did all
Is
that. The only, what's up?
there a curve in the on the lower spine, A to P?
My back and hips are perfect.
Okay, good,
Yeah,
good.
so yeah, I have a perfect curve. You know, hips, like, you know, no dysfunction in the hips. One of the
That's
problems is
good.
I have a bone chip in my right knee. That's preventing me from getting to extension and also full flexion. So I think what happens because I can't lock my knee, it kind of puts me into a like a little bit of a staggered stance, but yet I don't have any hip issues and I have no back issues. But I attribute that to basically lifting heavy weights, you know, multiple times a week, still training and doing things athletically. So, you know, it hasn't necessarily slowed me down, but one of the issues I was getting into in jits is that my neck was just getting jammed up and I was having to constantly go get it adjusted. So now I just do a whole bunch of stretches and some therapy and just work on it every day. And I think in the last 3 months, I've regained like 3 degrees. I sleep on like a kind of a buckwheat pillow thing, you know, that where my head is kind of supported here and my head lays more flat. So that's been helpful as well.
Yeah, so one of the things, so one of the laws that we kind of build this stuff off of is it's called Davis's Law, which tissue will remold based on the stresses that are applied. When you support anything in the body, you're going to make what you're supporting weaker. So, for instance, if you support your head in your curve at the same time when you sleep, the curve that you'll end up not getting the results that you want. But if you end up supporting the neck in enough to let the head weight of the head hang off of the back of whatever, like the like a almost like a slinky, right, hanging off the back of the pillow. So you just put something underneath your neck so that your head's off the back of it. That's the best way to stretch that curve in, or don't use a pillow at all.
Yeah, so that's what I have one of those foam kind of wedges, and I'll use that for like 20 or 30 minutes, and then I sleep kind of on this like kind of skinny buckwheat kind of cindler thing that fits right underneath the back of my head. or on the neck, and then my head kind of sits flat. When I looked at that picture, what it reminded me of was all these people that sleep with their head forward on the pillow. And I was like, man, that's what that looks like to me. It looks like it looks like my head is permanently has a pillow behind it.
Yeah. And that, and you're right. So that's basically what you're doing is you're thinking about alignment first. So if you think about alignment first and you put your body into a position where you can reverse that damaging effect of that forward head posture stuff that we do all day long. Mm-hmm. So if you notice, when I'm on a computer right now, I'm always looking up.
Yeah.
Right. My computer screens are higher. Whenever I look at video cameras, they're higher because your body posture is adjusting to that head position. So if I'm looking here, I'm going to have hunched over posture.
Sure.
Yeah. If I lift and I look up, you're going to lift up. So that you're making those small adjustments are critical when you're looking at the structure of the spine.
Yeah. I mean, you think about how many people you observe with kyphosis. I mean, like the kyphosis I see is like insane to see the amount of people that are so rounded. I mean, to the point where, we're creating a generation of humpbacks. But yeah, that kyphosis is wild.
Yeah, it's wild. And then that kyphosis affects on a lot of people, majority of people, their vagus nerve, and then that's where the problems are. People that have dysfunction in their systems typically have forward head posture because they're compressing the vagus nerve through the carotid sheath. And that's really what really led me into the sleep industry is understanding. So my struggle was always with heart rate variability. Are you familiar with HRV?
Yeah. I've tested it extensively and, from everything from like Whoop, Morpheus, obviously an Apple Watch and, it's one of those things that, I mean, obviously, as you know, there's no standardization. But also looking at real-time HRV, I don't like it. I don't know. I go back and forth. I think it's a good measure. Where I get nervous is when all of a sudden somebody's in the red and they're like, oh, I can't do anything today because I'm in the red.
Yeah, and which I really agree with that. What I like it is I love, as a scientist, I love objective data. And so when I'm looking at somebody, I have standard, I have multiple HRV units, but I always on all of them had been running really low just based on my high sympathetic tone. And HRV is best when it's not an individual unit. It's when you extrapolate it over, months and months and months, you get your averages and you compare it with other data. But I always was limited with my HRV. And until I started using pressure on my eyes when I slept, because that stimulates the vagus nerve, and decreasing my body core temperature as quick as I could. And then the second thing is being able to get out of my own brain. So when I started improving that arch of my neck, sleeping on my back, prevented myself from tossing and turning and used pressure. Now my HRV readings are off the charts and I'm getting much, much better restorative sleep.
So obviously sleeping in a good position. I mean, is the ideal position for us to be on our back?
The ideal position when you look at the human body is to sleep in a position where the weight is distributed over the greatest surface area and your supporting the body, believe it or not, as little as possible. Yeah. So that position is on your back.
Yeah.
And I talk about a 10-minute sleep ritual. You're really only in control of how you fall asleep. When you're sleeping, your subconscious brain's in control, right? Because we had talked about that at the beginning. So if we put the body into a position that is within alignment, and we create safety for the subconscious brain, then we teach the conscious brain how to fall asleep and get out of its own way. That's how you get great sleep. And you got to look at pain, safety, and temperature. To your point, temperature is very important. Temperature is really important only for a certain time, though. And that's why I like the beds that adapt and change, because it should heat up after a certain period of time.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I mean, to wake me up, like I don't even use an alarm. Like the bed gets warm and I wake up. So, I mean, I train at 6 a.m. So I'm usually up by like 5:20. And like today I got up at 5:19. I like rolled over and the clock hadn't gone off yet. I'm like, yes, I beat it by 1 minute. I've always had an interesting relationship with pillows. And I think it comes down more from like a hypoallergenic or more disgust, because you know people don't change their pillows out. I mean, I try to get a new pillow every 6 months, every year. I'm constantly looking for new pillows just because I have a feeling people keep the same pillows for years. And dust mites and allergies and just like your head's on there. I don't know. I probably goes back to I had a roommate in college that did not wash his sheets and did not use a pillowcase for the entire year. And ever since then, like every week I wash my sheets, I wash my pillowcase. I'm constantly looking for new pillows. So I don't even think I'm obsessive compulsive, but like, you know, I think one of the sleep rituals is cleanliness. I think you got to brush your teeth. I think you got to, wash your face. And, you know, if you've worked out or done anything, take a shower, get yourself as clean as possible, sleep in clean sheets. Like I really think that's a big, big factor for sleep hygiene is just being clean.
Especially if that makes you feel safe, right? So with who you are as an individual, that ritualistic thing puts you into a specific place. Absolutely, I totally agree. You know, one of the things that you when you Google, you see, unclutter your room. You know, treat your sleep space like a sanctuary. Mm-hmm. For some people like me, that makes a huge difference. For some other people, it doesn't make a difference at all. They can sleep in those specific areas. So when you are looking at, we touch, millions of people. And when you're making a broad, like me specifically, so when I'm making a recommendation, it's based on, what helps the majority of people. And you are absolutely correct. Uncluttering your space, opening up, that space, and cleaning, brush your teeth, use a water pick, all that kind of stuff. But really, when it comes down to it, it's the subconscious brain at that point that you're working on.
The other one too, I have a doctor buddy here, Dr. Eckert, who's my dentist.
I know Dr. Eckert. He's a great guy.
Oh yeah, he's the best. He makes mouthpieces, so he's made all my performance guards, but he actually makes me a sleep guard. That's a sleep appliance where it kind of like you wear a top and bottom and it clicks in. I'm not kidding you. Like when I tell you, if I put the mouth guard in and I lay on the bed, get into position, I take a deep breath and I fall asleep in under a minute. Like it is like my wife thinks something's wrong with me. She's like, I've never seen anybody fall asleep so fast. And I'm like, I'm just ready to go to sleep and I'm tired. I've already like mentally, compartmentalized all the stuff in my day. When I go to sleep, like I'm there to do it. But I've always been a really good sleeper. I mean, I was a third kid, so I used to sleep on the back seat when my mom was driving carpools. So I'm pretty good about being able to sleep anywhere. And then I didn't really realize the benefit of sleep until I had twins, and then we didn't sleep. So like I look at it very, very protective. Like this is my time. This is when I want to go to bed. And like when I'm ready to go to bed, I go to bed.
Yeah, and really, ultimately, one of the number one things that you can do it, for your body to become a good sleeper is come up with a consistent pattern, because your body wants consistency. So when you vary your how you sleep and the positions that you sleep in and the time you go to bed and what time you eat and then what you're eating, varying is adaptation, and adaptation is a delta, and the body doesn't like to change. So the more consistent you can be with the things that move your health forward, and the less consistent you can be with the things that degrade your health, the healthier you're going to be. It's pure adaptation, because your body's either moving towards health and wellness or away from it. So you're either, your body's either in survival or it's in growth. You can't survive and thrive at the same time. Sure. So when you have lifestyle habits that you need to survive at such a dominant rate because you expect so much performance out of your body, you need thrive time. And if you can balance that, you can do anything.
Talk to me about the pressure on the eyes.
Yeah, so the pressure on the eyes is a way to stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system. So I came up with this when I would, looking at ostriches sticking their heads in the ground, right, to feel safe. And I'm like, that's got to mean something. So we came up with this thing, what's called the head garage. So I would put a pillow around my neck, right? And then I would put a pillow on top of my head, and I would basically park my head in this garage. I started feeling better when I slept. So then when I would travel, because I travel all over the place, and the first night I travel, I can never sleep in the friggin' bed. And then before I knew why, I was, I didn't realize it was because my body didn't feel safe in that environment subconsciously. So once I started testing these theories, I'm like, holy mackerel, it's because of safety. So then now when I sleep, I have a wedge of pillows down one side of me, a wedge of pillows down another side of me, and pressure over my eyes. So once we started unpacking that pressure on the eyes, then we started doing HRV studies with people. And we said, okay, all I want you to do is simply do nothing else. And I want you to wear a sleep mask. And I want the mask that we have is a little tighter to the eyes because it puts that pressure. And I want to see how that helps your HRV. So it improved HRVs by 20 to 30% by just putting pressure on the eyes.
Was there any issue with like glaucoma or any like dysfunction with the eyes with having pressure on there?
Yeah, I didn't really look at that. But what's going to typically happen, if there's any sort of pressure that the body doesn't like, that sleep mask is not going to be on your head when you wake up.
Yeah, that's right. True.
So what I found, and that happened with most people. So your body is going to take it off if it doesn't want it on there.
Sure.
Subconsciously.
Yeah.
So
no,
what we find though is it's enough. So really, what's critical for HRV or body? So the body repairs the deep sleep, and the brain recharges during REM sleep. So is that first third of that sleep cycle is, to me, it was critically important to be able to drop the body's heart rate, drop the respiratory rate, drop the core temperature. In order to do that, we used pressure. And what we find is those sleep masks typically stay on for that period of time.
Do you find that some of your patients have dramatically more REM than they do deep sleep and then vice versa?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Is there something indicative, like if you get 2.5 hours of REM and 40 minutes of deep sleep? I mean, it's something I see pretty consistent with people that are kind of under recovered. And then I see people that might have, 2 hours of deep sleep and 30 minutes of REM. And yet, you're around them, it's kind of like squirrel, like they're almost like ADD. Their ability to focus is dramatically less.
So we've looked at thousands and thousands of nights of data. And there's nothing conclusive on this, like in anything, I kind of came up with my own, we apply the data that's out there. And then I look at my, 20 years of working with people with the autonomic dysfunction, which is autonomic nervous system. So what I find is the ADD brain, which is the internal thinkers, think a lot, live in their own heads, a lot of times need more REM sleep. So you're going to see that, and it all varies, but you're going to see that individual get or need a lot more REM sleep to be able to clear out that brain. And the person that, let's say, works out a lot more, they have dysfunction within their immune systems, digestive systems, or things like that, they're going to require more deep sleep, more repair. But if you work out more, you're not going to get that typically that repair that night. It's usually going to be a deeper sleep on the following night after. Like, for instance, tonight, I'm going to be mountain biking very heavily, my heart rate really high, pretty intense type stuff up until about 7 tonight. So tonight, I will not sleep. If my core temperature is going to run too high. I try to cool it down with an Uhler. It's never going to work because you know, my heart rate's going to stay too high. So tonight I'll get maybe 30 minutes of deep sleep, but tomorrow on repair I'll get an hour and 20 minutes of deep sleep. You know what I mean? So it does vary.
Based upon sleep, does it make sense to not work out later in the, like, late at night? I mean, you know, a lot of people go to the gym 6, 7, 8 o'clock after work. The other one, you know, people, you know, we have a lot of people using saunas. So using saunas late at night, you know, getting their core temperature up 174, 200 degrees, you know, doing bouts of sauna.
I love that, because one of the triggers for deep sleep or melatonin release or dump is cooling of the body's core temperature. That's why after lunch, people will typically be more tired. They think it's because they ate. But right after noontime, you get a dip in your core temperature, then it elevates. That's why that's the best time to take a nap. So when you're looking at the body's circadian rhythm, it typically elevates until till right about 9 o'clock at night, right? Then it starts dropping. So that drop right around, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock, that's when you're going to get your releases of melatonin. So if you can jump into a sauna and get your heart rate way up, what's going to happen is as that body cools, you're going to get more tired. Mm.
So there would be benefit to jumping into a sauna in the evening.
Yes.
Nice.
I do a steam.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of saunas. I actually just bought a new one, and it's been parked out there. I got to take a day to assemble it, but no, man, I'm sold on those. I feel so much better, you know, especially with my aerobic stuff and whatever. I just, I don't know. I mean, I know that there's a big fad right now with people doing a lot of contrast, a lot of cold baths and this, and I'm not as romanced in the ice. I've taken cold showers all my life and, you know, grew up in Southern California swimming in the ocean and surfing when it was cold. So that's not as big a deal for me, but yeah, I really do enjoy the effects of the sauna.
Well, think about, so let's talk about that. You know, ice and cold, right? So what are you trying to achieve with that? You're trying to achieve the extremes between the two systems, right?
Sure.
Sympathetics versus the parasympathetics. Well, if you're sympathetic or parasympathetic, if you're too sympathetic dominant or you're too parasympathetic inhibited, and you just go in and start challenging those two systems, you can cause more harm than good.
I've been saying this for a long time. If you're not wired for it, don't do it. And I see people, especially, you know, I like the Wim Hof stuff where they're trying to tap into this sympathetic nervous system. I've seen countless people get into cold baths, and you see them and they're like huffing and puffing and they're in this situation, like, you know, their fucking life is ending. I get in and my heart rate doesn't go up. But it's probably from the fact that we got into cold tubs almost every day in the NFL and in college. And, you know, I grew up in Southern California, like I said, surfing, like I still go out and get in my pool in the winter and it's cold. Is it cold? Yeah. Is it terrible? Does my heart rate go through the roof? Not really. And I think, a lot of people,
yeah, you're adapted.
Yeah.
The 99% of people that are doing this stuff are going from, you know, a couch, reading a book, listen to a podcast, and then jumping in a cold tub. Yeah. You're killing yourself.
Yeah. I think it fries people. And I think those huge swings, you know, people are doing this every day. I don't necessarily like it. You know, I mean, it's kind of reached this kind of fad place where, you know, and then the other funny part is that if the hardest thing you do all day is get in 3 minutes of cold water, I think we have to reevaluate your life.
You know, I think what you should do with that statement is you should quote yourself. You should put that everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you see like the David Goggins and Jocko, you know, do something hard every day. And I'm like, yeah, you should train, you should get up. I mean, you know, our bodies do not like, to, you know, our bodies prefer discomfort. There was, an interesting statement. It was in, I'm totally flanking on his name, but he wrote the book Lifespan.
We'll unpack this for you, but I like that statement, but I would love to unpack that with you.
Yeah. So he, in the Lifespan deal, the book, I was always curious why, you know, why these extremes might benefit us. And the idea is that the closer you put your body into a stressful situation where death is imminent, like getting under a heavy weight or running, I mean, you know, to that point where you feel like, I'm sure you know, mountain bike and train at some point, you've taken that big hit where you're like, oh man, like this is life or death. That position, when you do it, allows a positive gene expression where the genes are actually working for survival. If you do nothing but lay on the couch all day in comfort, the genes figure out, hey, this guy shouldn't be here very long, and end up working against us. So there was an interesting piece on like why some of these extreme kind of environments like hot and cold end up benefiting some people. But like you said, if you're constantly tapping into that sympathetic nervous system where, you know, you're torching yourself on these various ends, I don't think that's healthy either.
So against us or for us, the body really all it does is adapts to external stresses, right? So it's either going to, you know, if people smoke cigarettes all day long, smoke, it's going to adapt to that. If you drink water, it's going to adapt to that. If you drink milk, it's going to adapt to that. You drink gluten, you eat gluten, it's going to adapt to that. If you don't, so it's all about adaptation. And all growth happens, whether it's positive or negative, within what's called hormesis, right? That's so when you exercise.
Hormesis.
Yeah. When you exercising doesn't make you healthier that day. It's the adaptation to the exercise that makes you healthier. So when people look at dysfunction, we don't have to look at it like your body is making a mistake, because one of our core principles within our system is the body doesn't make mistakes. It reacts to the stresses that are applied to it. So when you're looking for health, you need to apply stresses to the body that will move it in a direction that you want to move it towards. If you're looking for lack of health, if you want to sit your ass on the couch, that's going to adapt by degrading the brain. You minimize the vermis. You're going to lose your prefrontal cortex. You're going to lean forward. You're going to cause more anxiety. But that's just adapting to lack of stimulation, because in the absence of stimulation to the body or the absence of stress, the body will absorb. And that's that. So I love that. But the body's always working for us. It's just adapting to the stresses you're applying to it,
You make a great point on the sleep. Like if somebody lays flat, I mean, just thinking for me, like anatomically, if I'm trying to get that curve back and I have something that's basically supporting the curve and my head gets to hang back and I can sleep like that for 7 or 8 hours, you know, over the course of, let's say, 3 months, opposed from just, you know, working on that wedge for, you know, 15, 20 minutes a day. I mean, it feels like a dramatically greater effect. I was going to ask too, sleep positions having to do with like hip and back dysfunctions.
We are going to do that right now. Can I switch back to my internet?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah, because I'd love to get here, but I want to show you some demonstrations. I can't see what I'm demonstrating from this thing.
Okay.
All right, they fixed it upstairs.
Recording in progress.
All right, great. Perfect. Okay. Got me?
Yeah. We got you back.
I'm going to show you on this bed too, kind of.
Yeah. No, I mean, because here's the one thing I can't figure out. Like when I got all those scans done and the guy did all the x-rays, like my, you know, the lymphatic curve in my back and the hips and everything were in perfect alignment and everything looked great. I mean, no dysfunction, no osteophytes, no collapsing, everything looked great. I've lifted weights, you know, pretty consistently, you know, between 4 and 6 days a week. Since I was 14 years old, I'm 48 now, played in the NFL for 10 years, have trained, I mean, all these things, and I like don't have that dysfunction. And what's wild to me is he was showing me some of these other x-rays of people that have not done these things and like need hip replacements and collapsing in this. And so it goes back to, you know, being strong tends to help people and just trying to be able to spin that narrative. But I also wonder if sleep is an issue. You know, just because you're stuck in this position for so long and you're kind of in this comatose state and, you know, maybe it's something like I'm thinking for my neck where, you know, there's a time under tension effect. So if maybe if people are misaligned when they sleep, that could be a major player for, you know, back and hip dysfunction.
Do you sleep on your back, on your side, or on your stomach?
I sleep on my back. But what I do is I kind of like lay on my back, but I wake up kind of angled to my left. You know, what I'll do is I straighten one leg and I kind of bend, and I kind of like in this kind of like almost you're seeing Star Wars when Han Solo gets stuck in the the thermite and he's kind of in this position. That's the exact position I sleep in. Like whenever they bring him out in what was that, Empire Strikes Back, like that frozen position is how I sleep.
That's believe it or not, you see a lot of babies sleep
like that. Yeah, like one arm, one, yeah. But I kind of sleep in that kind of like side
position. You don't have any shoulder issues because of that, right?
My right shoulder.
That's impingement syndrome.
Yeah, no, and so what's wild is my shoulder is fine. I just, I think I got some bad rehab advice. I kind of tore some cartilage, infraspinatus, and they did some voodoo flossing, which was compression. And I think the compression destroyed the back of my capsule. So my shoulder's pretty good, but the capsule's a little messed up. So just limited range of motion. So
is the limited range of motion when the arm is in extension up here?
Yes.
Or is the limited range? So you have no issues down here?
No,
right?
No. Down here, everything's fine. It's just overhead. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you kind of what. So based on looking at you, right?
Everything's reversed in the camera. So when I see myself, it's kind of like I need
I got it. Yeah. Put up your right hand.
Yeah.
That's all right. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
So here, this is adaptation. I'm going to tell you kind of what the typical issue is in the shoulder when I see what I'm looking at. So normally we should have curves in our spine, right?
Yeah.
And then when you lose this curve, what you are picking up in this A to P, there's probably some sort of either curve here or there's some adaptation to the loss of curve here. It's usually in this A to P film. Mm-hmm. So what that typically does is that will roll a shoulder in because there's a specific muscle that is weak. And it's a muscle that is very, very misunderstood. And it's the inferior trap muscle. And there's only one way to get the inferior trap muscle. And your arms have to be above your head to be able to do this. So one of the problems is we used to be climbers,
sure,
right? Back in the day. And we don't do that anymore. We live all the way down here. So the only way so a regular shrug is this way. And a reverse shrug is bringing just your shoulder blades down, almost like hanging from a bar and bringing yourself up and down without bending your elbows.
Yeah.
That is typically the only thing that we find that I do a lot of shoulder work. When the shoulders roll forward, it's usually underdeveloped inferior trap because it's fighting the rhomboids. Mm-hmm. It's fighting the lats, it's fighting the pecs, it's fighting too much. And it's overdeveloped. So that's typically how you get rid of the impingement syndrome with the arm above your head.
Yeah. It's so when the surgeon went in to clean everything up, the capsule was just, he referred to it as like two pieces of leather that were touching. Yeah. He's like, you know, everything else was fine. Everything else looked great. He's like, just the back of your capsule. So I've been kind of waiting for a few doctors to try to figure out if there was a way that they could do something. So I have a guy from my buddy Tony who does a bunch of manual therapy, comes once a week, beats the shit out of it, and I constantly stretch it and working to use it. And hopefully at some point it'll it's one of the limitations in jiu-jitsu. So I'll give people my left arm and not my right. I'm like, hey, here's my left arm. Mess with this one. But I feel like I can, that there's a solution out there. I just haven't found the right solution yet.
There is work on the inferior trap, and then you can also do some shockwave to it.
Oh, yeah. No, I did shockwave almost every 5 days for like 3 months.
You shouldn't need that one. So there's a constant irritation on it.
Yeah, there's something going on. So
Yeah.
So I go see every couple of months. I go see Dr. Craig Buehler. I don't know if you know Craig. He's at it.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine.
Yeah, so Craig. Yeah, Craig's one of my dearest friends. So, when I retired from the NFL, I was pretty beat up, and I met Craig, and it was as if somebody like gave me my life back, and the work that he did for me, it was I cannot thank him enough. I don't know where I'd be without him. But yeah, I mean, so I know chiropractors get a bad rap, and there's a lot of charlatans in that business, but some of the best people I've ever met were chiropractors, you know, like Dr. Buehler.
Great to hear. Thank you. And yeah, I had a torn rotator cuff for 5 years, and I did mine, mine because I was sleeping on my side, but I did a rock climbing over extension, trying to grab something, pulled it 5 years until I figured out the shoulder.
So mine came from, we were doing muscle ups. So I used to work for CrossFit.
Similar mechanism of injury.
Yeah. And I slipped out this way and I tore the infraspinatus and kind of tore the shoulder. And a buddy of mine was like, oh, you got to, you know, do compression and voodoo floss in this. And like, it just destroyed the tissue. It was, and then we had a guy, Keith Barr, on the podcast who talked about the worst thing you can do for a shoulder's compression. You need like shear and PNF load to heal a shoulder. So I've been doing that for a couple of years, and it's actually, I feel like it's improving, but I have at some point need to do something to improve the tissue quality in the back.
Yeah. And then, so just to also show you when we're lying on.
Oh yeah. No, let's get into it.
Right. So when we look at sleeping, the weight of my head, can you see me?
Yeah.
I like the weight of my head as that distractive force off of the bed, so that you stretch the curve in.
Yeah.
If I'm resting my head on the bed, then you don't have as much of that, because then you're supporting the head and the neck together.
Mm-hmm.
And the law states, if you support two things together, you're weak in it. Mm-hmm. So if you use distraction as the force that the body is going to adapt to, you'll get a better improvement in that cervical spine of yours. Then the other issue is during the day, what ends up happening is the vestibular system, which is the balance system, more specifically the vermis, will still adapt to that typical lean to the side of head translation. So you want to work on balance on I had a bunch of professional athletes working on slack lines and wobble boards and, you know, you surfing, that's huge, right? Because if you work on balance and stretch the neck back at the same time and then lift your screens up, body posture will follow that, all of that.
Yeah, my son plays video games. And so I took all the furniture out of his room and I got him a beanbag, and he has to sit on the beanbag looking up.
That's the best thing you can do. If they're going to, regardless if you're reading books and you know, that's good, playing games, whatever it is. Where your head is for a majority period of time, your eyes and your vestibular system will adapt to that.
So, I mean, if you think about, right, like the way the spine and the neck are, it's kind of a natural shock absorber, right? Like the head's supposed to be there and then the curve. So over time, as that curve changes and the head starts tilting forward, the body looks to go in homeostasis. So that's when you start getting the rounding of the back and all these other issues.
It's called dura mater. It inserts here.
Mm-hmm.
In here, and I know you don't have this, but with one of the most common things that would bring somebody into one of my office was back pain. And for every time I would say, you don't have a back problem, you have a neck problem, because what you've done is you've lost the curve here and do the dural attachments. The body did this. So your lower back tension is only being caused from forward head posture, and it's an adaption that's happening through the psoas. Even though they have no bone spurs, no osteophytes, no degeneration, but they have pain, it's because the altered biomechanics are taking the whole load of the body. So it was really difficult when I was in practice, when I was coming up with these things, to teach people, listen, I get it, you're in back, you have back pain, but you got to fix your neck in order to bring the function back down there, because you're correct. Once you lose the curve up here, that integrity of that curve, not just neurology is affected, but the whole body posture is affected. It's called the writing reflex.
What about like the feet? I've come to the conclusion, 99.9% of our contact with this earth is through the feet. And a lot of the dysfunction I see in the hips and the knees, and just for a lot of athletes, especially for their ability to do, reduce force and apply force, comes from like weak feet. And, to the point where, if somebody has, strong feet, and I think what's interesting to me too, is you look at like toes, and people are using toe spreaders and all these different ways to train the feet. But what they don't understand is that you have to be able to splay the toes and use the feet under some form of load, whether it be change of direction or weight. So as you've gotten into this, feed and this, I mean, I'm just wondering if that's something that you've examined and come across. You're like, man, because I mean, you're talking about two tops of the chain. You're talking about the head and the neck and then the feet. And it feels like weakness in both of those in bad position just affects everything in the middle.
So based on what we have gone over, feet are definitely a key issue. And a lot of people have problems with feet. You're correct. What do you think the possible cause could be for all the feet issues that we have? Well,
I think it's got to be shoes. I think it's I think it's shoes.
You understand. You think, but most people don't. Anytime you support the body, whatever you are supporting in the body, you're going to make that aspect weaker. Just remember, we say the body doesn't work against us. It adapts to stress. Degeneration and arthritis, it's not a mistake. It's an adaptation to lack of movement. So if I always, with my friggin' ADD brain, I always take things to extremes to understand. And this is really where kind of, I don't even want to. So there's a divide in understanding of knowledge on what causes joints to break down. There are certain professions that think it's hypermobility. And then there are some people think it's hypomobility. People think it's the muscle tone. Some people think, get rid of all that bullshit and let's really understand it's all about adaptation. There's no mistakes. So if I put your arm in a cast, and let's say an elbow, that's restricting 100% of the range of motion. Is that going to make the elbow stronger or weaker?
Weaker.
Yeah, 100%. That's law. There's no, you can't argue that.
Yeah.
If I'm going to use it and move it, does that make it stronger or weaker?
It's always going to make it stronger.
Stronger.
Yeah.
Okay. Now here's the mind blow. Okay. Is a cast creating a stable condition or an unstable condition? Is the cast a stable condition or an unstable condition?
Well, it depends on where the cast is. If the cast is on your arm, it's kind of
on my arm.
Well, I mean, I guess what they're trying to do is they're using a cast to create stability.
Stability. Okay.
Yeah. But
the cast is creating stability. So the body's adaptation to stability is
atrophy.
Atrophy.
Yeah.
So is moving the arm stable or unstable? It's unstable environment.
Yeah.
So the body has to create stability by maintaining and rebuilding a joint.
Yes.
Those are the far ends of the spectrum. Is a shoe with arch support creating a stable condition or an unstable condition?
It's creating a stable condition.
What's the adaptation to creating stability?
Weakness.
Done. That's why.
So when I came in the NFL, I have pretty high arches and I've never had any foot issues. So when I came in the NFL, we had a old Jewish podiatrist guy named Dr. Cohen, who one of my favorite dudes in the world, because he shot me straight. He's like, hey, here's the deal. You got high arches. You potentially could have some foot problems. He goes, I'll make you a deal. I'll show you how to stretch your feet and take care of your feet. Or if you're lazy as fuck, I'll just make you orthotics. What do you want to do? And I was like, show me how to stretch my feet, take care of my feet. And so he's like, I don't want you to wear shoes. The only time I want you to wear shoes is when we're shower sandals in the house and in the shower. And when you're on the football field, you know, obviously wear your cleats. But he's like, other than that, I want you to walk around barefoot as much as you can. And then he showed me a whole series of stretches for my feet. And so I asked him, we'd been friends for a while. I finally asked him, I'm like, hey, why'd you say that to me? And he goes, well, my dad was a podiatrist. And he goes, you have to remember before the advent of orthotics and all this fancy tech, being a podiatrist required you to show people how to care for their feet. And people came in with dysfunction in this. And he goes, you got to remember like the advent of shoes and Nike. And he went through this whole history of it. And he's like, they're actually destroying, you know, by all of this cushioning and all these things, it changes the gait. And when he went through it all, and he's like, you can either, you know, live in this world or not live in this world. Like he goes, this is the world I'm living in. These are the shoes people want to wear. So I have to make corrections and I have to try to fix them. Or I can just tell people the truth and let them make their own decisions. And so I have never really worn shoes since then. I wear flip-flops. I train barefoot. I mean, I wear as much as I can. I mean, obviously I won't go barefoot or wear sandals on a plane. That's disgusting. But like around our house here in Texas, like, you know, we have a Japanese style where you leave your shoes at the door, walk around barefoot. I didn't let my kids wear shoes until they were probably 3 or 4, until they went to preschool. And, constantly working on stretching my feet and taking care of them. And I think that's probably why I haven't had some of the back issues and some of the other things in hip, just because I think, you know, working on splaying the toes and having strong feet has been a godsend for me.
So I'm going to give you the neurology of why that happens, because it's something I'm really familiar with. This is my whole world before, you know, diving into the sleep world. It's all neurology, and I love brain health. So let's take that foot, right? So when you're walking and using lack of a shoe, that's creating an unstable environment for the body. So the body has to adapt by creating stability. That's something very specific to the brain, which is why this is important. And I'll track this in for you. So if you sit down on a couch and you sit your ass down on a couch and you stay on that couch, like, so let's say older people do, or people watch TV all day long, that's creating a more stable condition for the body, correct? Because mm-hmm. sitting your ass down, and that lack of stability does something what's called decreases proprioception into the brain.
Sure.
So when you decrease proprioception, you atrophy the vermis, which is the back portion of the brain. When you atrophy the vermis, you atrophy the prefrontal cortex, which is where anxiety and dysfunction comes from. Mm-hmm. So when you are either wearing shoes or you're sitting down all day long and you're not looking for the body to do work, you're creating more of an anxious state within your body because you're decreasing the brain in a very specific way, which then eventually is going to affect your gait. So you can look at the way somebody walks, and I can tell you what their brain functioning is and what their lifestyle habits are, because your body is going to walk and lean towards the side of weakness. So most people that have all this forward head posture and they lean forward when they walk, mm-hmm. that's going to create bunions, but it's also a representation of what their mental state looks like. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy shit how everything is connected. So
imagine that.
Then, yeah, I know, right?
Right. Imagine that.
And then you know, my friggin' brain, the curse is I just think too much. I'm always thinking. I have probably thousand pages of written notes of like how, building out techniques and testing them and playing with them. Every time I'm on a plane, I'll fill up a new notepad with notes, and it's just, you know, and then when you get a thinker like Dr. Buehler, like you know, Eckhart. Yeah. Right. And these people think differently.
Yeah.
They don't think differently because they read it in a textbook differently. It's because they look at people differently. And that's truly when you know you want to align yourself with those types of people.
I got asked to speak at an event next month for Soarnext Summer Strong. And I've been working. I do a lot of talks. So, I mean, obviously podcasts and whatever and present. And I've been working on this talk on integrity. And integrity is really interesting to me. So I was a rhetoric major in college. And so I probably started as a stoic and kind of moved into becoming an existentialist later in life as a Berkeley grad. And one of the tenets of existentialism is like integrity and truth. And more importantly, it goes back a step further into identity. And so I've come to the conclusion that most people don't have an identity because all they do is they parrot the ideas and the statements of those around them. So if you look at it from an evolutionary model, we probably grew up in these like 50 to 150 person, like little camps, right? You know, walls around it protect you from the bad stuff. If you did not conform to what, let's say, the group thought, or you had a contrarian idea and they didn't like it and they threw you out and you were on the other side of the walls away from fire and shelter and help, you know, it'd be open to getting killed by bad guys and wild animals. So I think like evolutionary, we're kind of designed to want to fit in and more importantly, like adopt the ideas of the more dominant people around us. And so And this is, I'm have ADD too. So,
I'm constantly,
yeah, I'm in a constant thinker, but like, you know, and in an observation, and I constantly like, you know, for the system I developed for Power Athlete, our ability to, you know, foster and develop athleticism, our entire training system is based off of this model. But as I got into this kind of, this work on integrity and identity, and more importantly, like ideas, most people just parrot other people's stuff. Because one, they don't have the wherewithal or the understanding to actually have original ideas. So it's just much easier to parrot something else and to kind of repeat other things. And then if you look in social media land and, you know, where we exist, it's much of just the same because people don't really have an identity. And if you don't have an identity and you don't understand what you really believe, like what you truly believe, what you would stake your reputation, your life on, then it's really hard to lack or it's impossible to have integrity. And the reason being that there's just so many few original thinkers because people are afraid of, you know, being thrown outside on the other side of the wall and not being part of the community. You know, so you have a guy like Dr. Buehler who, you know, develops an incredible system on how to fix athletes. And I remember I got done working with him and I was like, Doc, what do I do now? He's like, go out and train and break it. When you break your toys, bring them back and I'll fix them. I've never heard that from a doctor. You know, Dr. Eckerd, like, was talking about, like, the position of the mouth in terms of creating, like, you know, parasympathetic. I mean, just some of the really interesting stuff where these people have taken it a step further and they make a correction that's unique. And I've been very blessed with this podcast to, you know, connect with, you know, hundreds of people that have been unique thinkers. And it's really easy to tell who has integrity and, more importantly, who has original thought and has taken... I hear what you all are saying, but I don't think we're going in the right direction. I'm going to go my own way and I'm not nervous of getting thrown on the outside of the walls. And so it's, I've been working on this talk about integrity and more importantly, like teaching people that, just following and parroting what other people say, because you think it right, doesn't change the world for the better. It just means more of the same. And part of what I found with strength conditioning and what we were teaching was I saw what people were teaching and I realized that there was a different model for this based on movement, not movements. And if I could get people to move well and then find all the pieces, like if I put people into the model and you can't move well under load, well, then we'll find a load you can move well with. And if you don't, then we have to find other people that fix it, like a Dr. Buehler, like a Victor Hugo, who's you know, the top ultra BJJ player in the world who I train, had an L4, L5 issue. Any form of axial loading shut him down. So we had to try to get him strong. So we just basically changed the load, put it on, you know, belt squat and found other movements he could do. Got him a point. He was real strong. Took him to Dr. Buehler. Buehler cleaned him up and he just literally took off at 100 miles an hour. And I remember Craig telling me, hey, if you'd brought him here when he was weak, I don't know if my techniques would have been as beneficial as now he's strong. He's in good shape. The system is primed and ready for it. And so, you know, I'm always constantly looking for people that kind of fit within that paradigm of like looking to push, you know, this performance narrative and not just merely parrot what everybody else is saying, which is that kind of inner cross section of like integrity and truth and identity.
Yeah. You know, and you said it's paradigm, like in the absence of clarity around your sole purpose, it's difficult to tell differences between opportunity and distractions. So what would happen is if you don't have your own paradigm, which society is going to create it for you. So remember, you have to remember our bodies or what we want or how we are, we want to move towards comfort and stay away from pain, right? So our body wants to be comfortable. And if we're not thinking that's more comfortable for everybody else that's out there, because they know that you're controllable. Because your subconscious brain is always listening and the conscious brain is reacting to what the subconscious brain is thinking. So if you're not in control of who you are, why you were put on this planet, and you don't live a purpose-filled life, you're just being dragged through life by your emotions and you're being dragged through life by other people's perceptions of you.
Yeah.
So if you don't, so most people that have anxiety have no identity about themselves. And they're zigzagging through life because they don't have a clarity of where they're going. And then the person that's torn apart has made one decision and then another decision. And at the beginning, those decisions may feel good. But if those decisions are in contradiction, you then extrapolate time. The further time goes down the road, the more torn apart you become, because the wedges like close together at the beginning, But the further you go down, next time you it's called the win-win situation, right? The cubby thing, where you have one horse going this way and one horse going this way, you get torn apart. But in the when you have clarity about the direction you're going in, so our mission with our company is to help people is to awaken the full potential of a well-rested, aligned you. So to help people get way better sleep, that's well-rested, aligned you. Everything I stand for is within the alignment of the structure to improve overall function. So then all of your company, you know, we have three different companies right now, and all of their purposes are in line with my sole purpose of why I've been put on this planet. And then when you start alignment, you start seeing differently, things differently. And then people will not remember what you say in their presence. They will remember how you make them feel.
Sure.
And you'll make them feel comfortable, and they'll follow you based on how they align with you. So at their subconscious level of what they want. So that's kind of,
I think we have, there's for most people, I would hope there's an inherent, like, I think you could break it up into strength and weakness. If people say things they don't really believe or they buy into, there's an inherent weakness you can feel in the statement. And I think when people are constantly leaning into statements or, you know, positions, and they make, you know, preposterous claims or whatever, or they act in an inauthentic way, or they lean into that weakness, I think for perceptive people, they can feel it. You're like, this feels like bullshit. I don't know what it is about that guy. But yet there's other people who are kind of similar frauds. And what they tend to do is glob together because, like, hey, if he's full of shit, I'm full of shit. And so I've realized that these people live in camps. And it's because, you know, this narrative is one to teach. And, you know, if you lack integrity and I lack integrity, it's better for us to kind of band together because then we won't call each other out. And I feel like, and this was just, you know, as I started kind of prepping for this talk, there is like, you know, let me see how I put this. Like, people ask, like, well, how do I begin to have integrity, right? Well, you have to have original thought. So you have to strip away everything that you've been, you know, influenced to do. And it goes back to, you know, read, like you said, you write. I read and I write. And I was taught when I was very young, if you want to learn to think, you have to learn to read and write to the best of your ability first. Only a fool talks before he learns to read and write. And so being able to, you know, put your ideas down on paper and look at them and then, you know, go in and have conversations with some of the smartest people on the planet through books, for me has been an incredible kind of journey of like understanding who I am, what do I believe, and more importantly, what I want to accomplish. And I think when you're like that, you know, the people are drawn to you like a beacon. And when you're not, I think, you know, just the bad things get drawn to you. So, I do believe, and I can honestly say now as an older adult, there were two things I fucked up considerably when I was younger. I didn't understand the need of an aerobic base. So I had I gave no credence to aerobic base. Like, I'm going to sprint, I'm going to lift weights, and that's it. The other one is sleep. I purposely went out and drank way too much on Friday nights. Slept like shit on Saturday, would stay up late on Sundays and played Saturday nights, and then would play sleep deprived and a little hungover every Sunday because I thought it gave me an edge and made me put me in a worse mood. And I just had a young NFL player kid, Will Fries, who plays guard for the Colts here for the last couple of weeks. And as I was telling him this, the look on his face was like, that's insane. And I'm like, I know, I played in a different time. That was kind of what I thought I needed to have an edge. Knowing what I know about sleep and performance, and I've been doing for the last, you know, 12 years of my life, I made a lot of mistakes that I probably could have done this much easier if I had understood. But, you know, if you are an intelligent person and you have integrity in this, you got to kind of make your own mistakes. And hey, this is how I believe at this point, independent of what people are telling me. And then you kind of come back and you're like, man, I could have avoided that issue a little bit. But
well, the good thing about the ADD brain is it rationalizes very, very, very yeah. well, but the way the body adapts is it adapts by law consistently the same. So you can rationalize yourself telling you don't need sleep for a certain age. You can pick that up in the adrenal glands over a long period of time. You can push through a lot of stuff, but eventually, if you don't figure it out, your body is going to figure it out for you.
Oh yeah.
You know, and when I mean, I, you know, people that fly in from all over the place, and we'll work with them. And the one of the so consistent things that I had seen, my subconscious brain saw it. See, so intuition, and this is why I'm actually starting to teach what I call the neurostructural protocol. It's a way better sleep protocol. And people would always say, oh, you're so intuitive. You're so intuitive. You're so intuitive. And then I'm like, I'm Italian from Boston. I hate even the word intuition. So, but then I
why? Because it sounds like your old Italian grandmother.
Yeah, exactly. The evil eye.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then actually in Austin, I went, you know, Roy Williams.
Yeah.
And out there. So Roy said something to me, and I just like just explained what intuition was. And then I was doing another podcast with Tara, and she further explained intuition, and kind of I've put it together in my mind like this. Intuition is this, where there are so many data points that this conscious brain can't even fathom putting together. The subconscious brain has already put them together and is telling the consciousness what the heck is going on.
Yeah.
So when you are looking in the right directions and you base your things on laws and you start to see things differently and you start to become intuitive in nature, where you just know what's wrong with people, that's okay. But that's not the conscious brain. That's because you've mastered your work. You're subconsciously competent.
Yeah.
And so what happens is you are master at your art because you believe in what you do and you've seen it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So those things with sleep, when people would come into me, I already knew that they had sleep problems. I didn't know why I knew it, but people would tell me consistently, they're telling my subconscious brain all the time, Peter, listen, you're not looking at sleep. It's not even on your friggin' radar because you don't sleep well, but you know, there's something here, put both of them together. And that's how it came together for me.
So if somebody wanted to guarantee that they had the best night of sleep, temperature in the room, temperature of the bed, position in sleeping, and that head position, I know you have a pillow that you've created. Is that universal for everybody or just people like me that have a messed up curve, or do everybody has a messed up curve at this point?
Most 90% of people do.
Okay.
Have messed up curves. If you want to get a great night's sleep, you first have to start with the body. So most people think consciousness, they don't even think about the subconscious. And then they think about body last, which is they believe comfort is comfortable for the body. Comfort is safety for the subconscious. It's not comfortable for the body.
Yeah.
So we want to back in that triune. You want to start with alignment for the body that is comfortable and sustainable over hours and hours and hours and hours. So you start on your back, neck nest or a pillow under your neck, get that neck arched back, arms and your feet out of from under the covers. You never want to cover your arms and your feet.
I sleep with my feet out and I put my hands on my arms on top. I sleep with my feet out and I like the thought, like if I wake up and my feet are stuck underneath the covers, I like kick them and then like kick all the covers off. Like I have to sleep.
That's the first thing I do in a hotel room. Get the friggin' sheets off that fucking bed.
Yeah.
Get it off.
Yeah.
And then back in. And I love my wife, love her, but I will never share the same covers with her ever. Right? I do not believe that should happen because remember we talked about core temperature.
Yeah.
Two heaters under the same blankets is a furnace.
Yeah.
So do whatever you do at night in the bed, whatever, that's fine, but use your same covers. Don't use your same covers, use your own covers. So put yourself into a position, arms outside of the sheets, feet outside of the sheets, pressure on your forehead, and you can't think yourself to sleep. You have to remember yourself to sleep. So think about something in the past. Think about when you were on the field. I think about an 18-hole golf course where I walk the golf course every time. If you think about yourself walking a golf course and you put yourself to sleep on it once, you'll put yourself to sleep on the same memory. You can't think about golfing tomorrow. You have to remember what you golfed yesterday. And then that's a way to trick the brain to be able to put your subconscious into a safe place.
Any thoughts on time of sleep? and sleep tracking.
I have a lot of thoughts on that.
I know. I was just trying to give you an easy layup, but like I have that 8Sleep that has the sleep tracking in the bed. And the hilarious part is it gives you a score, which now, because there's a number, it makes me competitive, which I think is genius that they've turned sleep into a competition. So like now my goal is to try to get it to 100, and I've hit it a few times. But, I wonder, we've had Doc Parsley and just a lot of sleep experts on the podcast, and they always go back to this idea of like, you know, most people need between 7 and 8 hours of sleep. And if you're in the 6, you know, you're going to, over time, you're going to be deficient.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more than that. I'm about 8 or 9 hours of sleep. So this is what I tell people about sleep, how much you need, based on your quality, really. It's based on your quality, based on how much performance you want out of your body the next day. So if you want more performance, you need more repair. It's love, not you're going to internalize it. And that repair, I mean, trackers, like I said, they're only as good as the data used consistently. I don't care if it's Whoop, Scoop, Aura, Mora, it doesn't matter. Just use the same thing consistently.
Yep.
Write your data down. When you feel great, like you're crushing it, what are the scores that day, right? When you feel horrible, what are your scores that day? And then if you want 20% more performance, work on improving those scores by 20%. In each area of the data is, you change those and improve those differently, right? So if it's, you know, restlessness, it's positioning, right? Most people, it's going to be restlessness. But and if it's HRV, there's, you know, you're ate too late, or you're detoxifying, you had caffeine after a certain period of time. There's so many things. HRV follows your heart rate. In order to lower your heart rate, you need a parasympathetic tone. If you can't get that HRV right, you have an issue with the parasympathetic nervous system. And a lot of times that's structural with forward head posture.
So is there a weighted mask or anything that you would recommend? I mean, you have me fascinated with this idea of putting pressure on the eyes. Because I've just never heard of it.
You can go to necknest.com. The one that we sell is $11, I think. It's like $10 or $11. It's just really a strap. I have this kind of the satin one, you know what I mean? And in like people, you don't want it too hard. Like this one right here, this is kind of my older one, mm-hmm. and it was too tight. So we have ones that are just enough pressure. They also make them where they're masks and they don't put pressure on the eyes. I tried those. They just don't get as good of reading. So there is something about the pressure right on the eye that makes the difference. Mm-hmm. And like I said to people, I've never had an issue with somebody with their eyes, because the subconscious brain's going to rip the damn thing off after about, you know, an hour anyways, or 2 hours anyways.
What about CPAPs? I get a question at least every week about somebody who's gone to the doctor, they've done a sleep study and they recommended a CPAP. My buddy Tom Inkledon out at Cosenta out in Arizona sent me a CPAP, and I used it for a little bit. I did not really notice anything, but I think the mouthpiece works better for me. So it's pretty interesting that, you know, some, but yet I have some clients and some guys that train with us who like travel with it, can't live a night without it.
Well, you know, when you're looking at a CPAP, we are looking at the dysfunction in the airway, right? Airway management is really critical to be able to get down. One of the issues with our airway management is way back from the day we were never taught to breathe correctly. And airway management comes from breath. So if you become a side sleeper and you're putting direct pressure on your max, on your sinuses, you're going to compress the face and you collapse those sinuses. So there are techniques where they stick the balloon up the nose, they blow the balloon up, and they open up those sinuses.
Have you ever had that done?
I have, and I'll never have it done again, but I recommend everybody has it done.
I absolutely love it. Every time I see Dr. Bueller,
I hate it.
Every time.
I think it is. I hate shit in offices, but I think it's friggin' fantastic. I think it was such a great technique.
The first time Dr. Bueller did it to me, the crunch was so loud, it sounded like somebody stepped on a bunch of Pringles.
Me too. And ice cream like a little baby.
Oh man. Well, the because the sutures were so calcified and so scarred down with scar tissue that when he cracked that thing, it was like it removed a pressure out of my skull that I didn't know until it was gone. And I was like, wow, I was living like it was like somebody released it. And then I didn't even know that pressure was there just because it always had been there. And every time I go see him, he does it. I love it.
Yeah, it's a great technique. So one of the issues is it's airway when you're lying on your back. So people are like, oh, I can't sleep on my back because I either snore or I just can't sleep because my airway closes down. That's because they're using a pillow under their head, which tucks their chin, which is closing the airway down. But if you put a pillow under your neck and you arch that neck back, there's no way for that tongue to obstruct. They did those studies, and the anesthesiologist did that study with that 5-degree, you know, that head all the way back like that, and you're looking straight up at the ceiling, you actually open up your airway. And then what you can do is you can use either a sleep mask under your jaw, keeping the mouth shut. But what I do is I tuck my covers underneath my chin, between my chin and my chest. And because I don't toss and turn, it keeps my my mouth shut all night. And then I suck my tongue to the roof of my mouth, and the subconscious will keep that mouth shut for a long period of time.
So, all right. We've effectively tackled sleep. Any other factors that I'm missing that affect sleep, hydration? I don't know. My wife can't sleep.
Hydration, you don't want to drink because you'll wake yourself up. Drink a lot of water at night. You want to have hydration done early or you'll piss all night long. Food, right? So a lot of people are intermittent fasters, which I think, you know, is good. I particularly intermittent fast, and I don't eat. One of the byproducts of digestion is heat. So I'm really, really conscious about not eating late at night. You can have food in your stomach, like a carbohydrate and a fat mix, if you didn't eat enough at lunch, or you worked out too much and your metabolism's too high. So you want to make sure that your heart rate is not high when you're going to sleep. Heart rate's high because of either, you know, you're pumping blood through your body because you ate, alcohol, drugs, or exercise.
So, I can say that my HRV is dog shit when I drink alcohol.
Because the heart rate goes like this.
Yep. And my breathing increases. So like, I'm somewhere around like 14.5 breaths in a minute, I guess is kind of what the deal is. All of a sudden my breath will go up to like 15, and then all of a sudden it tanks my HRV, and my resting heart rate when I sleep is like, I think is 48. 47, and then somewhere between that, like 47, 51, somewhere in there. And all of a sudden it'll be like 54. 65. What's that?
Yeah. 62, 65 when you're drinking.
Oh yeah. It'll be in the 50s. And if my heart rate's in the 50s and my breath is up, it'll like my HRV is dog shit. So
you're done because you're detoxifying and you're sympathetic dominant at that point because your body's metabolism's high. That's why. So when somebody's sick, okay, what's one thing that happens in their body? Typically at night, you get a what?
Fever.
Fever.
Yeah.
Do you sleep good when you have a fever? And the answer to that question is no.
No, not at all.
Because you have elevated core temperatures up. What system is causing the fever?
Immune system.
The immune system's telling the body to elevate the temperature, but the immune system cannot elevate the temperature.
So stimulating the metabolism.
So what is happening is the immune system saying, I work way more efficient at a higher temperature. So your metabolism, can you increase the temperature? So everything that happens when you're detoxifying or when you drink alcohol, it's the same thing that happens when you have a fever. Heart rate's going to increase. So you're basically awake all night long, and which is going to tank your HRV because you're sympathetic dominant. That's why that happens.
Gotcha.
Is that adaptation?
Dude, I think it's...
I think we got it.
Yeah, no, I think we covered the bases. All right, so I think if sleep's an issue, What's the best way to reach out if somebody wants to,
you know? They go to drsleepright.com and they take a sleep risk assessment, a free quiz. You just get on there, see how your sleep habits are affecting your health. And then if they jam with what we're doing, they can follow us on, you know, Instagram, TikTok. They can go through one of our self-guided programs. We're launching a membership where then people will have access to me within the membership to ask me questions specifically about them. But yeah, so that's it. Drsleepright.com. And then from there, you'll be able to find the neck nest and all the stuff that we do.
Yeah, no, definitely go check it out. I'm a huge fan of those. I don't like conventional pills. Like I said, I'm grossed out by them. So I have to constantly be looking for new and new pillows. But yeah, it's one of the first ones. If somebody tells me they don't sleep, the first question I ask them is how often do you change their pillow? And they're like, I don't know if I've had it for years. And I'm like, ugh, that's disgusting. All right.
We've got to do it. Yeah. Listen, the brushes his teeth, use a water pick at night, flosses, ear.
I was laughing on you on your site. You sell the polyester covers. So like, you know, being able to have those and wash them, it's fundamental. So, well, dude, it was great.
We call that OCD attached with
I don't know if it's OCD. But I'm I deal obviously with some ADD stuff too. But I do the same thing. I look for patterns, you know, I look for patterns in training. You know, you can't put me in front of like hundreds of people, thousands of people over time, and you're not going to break them into patterns. So it's how you organize things. And, you know, without some form of organization, it's really hard to be able to pull in large amounts of information. So I have to kind of catalog people into these things, and you got to have tests for it. But, the sleep one is, you know, cause I do have three kids. And so, teaching them that if they learn to be good sleepers when they were babies, and even at the ages now, my son's 8, my daughters are 12. I keep talking to them about it's a superpower, but yet like trying to convince them, hey, it's not worth staying up late watching something or, you know, doing these things and trying to convince a 12-year-old of these things. So I'm in this constant fight, but I keep telling them, you're going to figure out the value of sleep, whether or not you learn it from me now and understand the superpower, or you figure it out like I did later in life, but you'll figure it out at some point.
We're talking to a college now to implement our sleep programs into the college itself. So all the students go through sleep education to help them, you know, perform better. So it's a project where we're actually going to be launching here in the next few months. All right. Because kids and lack of sleep is an epidemic bigger than the pandemic ever is.
Oh, yeah. There's something like, I was trying to explain this to my daughter today. When we were kids, and I hate saying when we were kids, but literally we had ATV and there was never anything on. It was like the news and MASH. I keep telling them, I'm like, it wasn't like it is today where you have Amazon Prime and Netflix and Hulu and streaming, and you can like turn on and watch, you know, 20 seasons of Grey's Anatomy, you know, with like 400 episodes per season. And it just binge watches this. And like, you know, like my dad used to call the TV the idiot box. And this was, you know, he passed away before all the streaming stuff became huge. But it really came down to, when you are being fed this information, your brain is, you know, just kind of in a holding pattern, and you're just absorbing useless information. It's not like you're sitting down to read. And so I'm in this like constant fight of, I think being old enough to remember how it was. And more importantly, like, hey, there was never anything good on. I always say to my dad or my mom, like, there's never anything good on TV. And they're like, why don't you read a book? Which was like the universal response that every parent have. Now there's no more like, there's nothing good on, because there's infinite things on. So they can always find something. So it's a different world. And I also wonder too, I think the technology's done well, especially with this blue light. I'm not a huge biohacker fan. And, you know, I see Ben Greenfield wearing, you know, red glasses and all this blue blocking and all that. But I don't know. I go back and forth on a lot of it, but I think some of it is like, what can you control and what can you necessarily execute?
Yeah, no, you're right on. And that's, and like, as I go back to it, you know, I have anchors. If you can't tell, I always go back to them, right? It's adaptation. If you can put your body under enough positive stresses, right? Eustress, and less distresses, your body is going, you're going to be a healthier person. You're going to be able to gain the, you know, the things, you know, the gain the results that you want. You know, fat is a stress layer to the external environment. And so, you know, high cortisol levels, you know, high stress levels, lack of sleep. You know, a lot of people like, I diet all the time, but I just can't lose weight and I exercise. Well, your body's so fatigued because you're not sleeping and getting the repair that that's doing the same thing as just sitting on the couch all night. So yeah. when you're looking at, you take everybody individual, really what it comes down to is like you know, listen, who are the resources that you're trusting for your information? Who do you align with? Find them, follow them, and then you don't have to do everything they do, but just, you know, start building your own paradigm of where your health is. Understand that you don't have a disease problem or health problem. You have a lifestyle issue. And the more healthy things you do, you're going to, you know, you'll adapt to that. So that's kind of where I stand. I try to do as many healthy things that I know to do to my system. So when I have my margaritas on Friday night and I get that, I break a 24-hour fast with a margarita. Do you really think that that's probably the best thing to do? No, absolutely not. But I know I'm going to nap on Saturday.
I am not mad at a margarita. I can only think of one time in my life where I turned down a margarita and I still regret that day. So, well, Doc, dude, it was great to connect with you. I love the shirt and the energy, man. I look forward to launching this one. So, I'll definitely reach out, but, dude, thanks for coming on Power Athlete Radio and, thanks for connecting.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Right. See you. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales you've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.